This is a production of Cornell University.
That since we do have quorum, if I can get a motion to call the meeting to order, we can get started.
Motion.
All right, we have a second. All right, CJC committee meeting now to order. I do want to acknowledge that I have not had a chance or to take a look at where we're at with meeting minutes. So I've just been really focused on the forums and the feedback pieces. So we'll talk a little bit later this evening about our meeting plan, and that will get us to a regular meeting process and getting into ensuring that we're approving the minutes on a regular basis. But for tonight's business, it's really just focusing on the feedback that we have currently, as well as the forum feedback that we received. I have had a chance to review the forum transcript and the questions, and was able to assess the list of questions that I would classify as not answered. We noted in the beginning of the forum that anything that wasn't answered that the CJC would respond to. I just want to clarify that I didn't give us a timeline, so we don't have to respond to that by tomorrow or anything, because we have the current deadline. But I think for our next meeting, then we'll add these questions, and I'll float them out to everyone so you have a copy of the questions that that were not answered in the forum that we can review and respond to. But for today's meeting, I want us to focus on the current comments that we have, excuse me, along with the taking the forum information. So the transcript of the forum is available. We have that available, and it's in a rough draft. It'll be finalized pretty soon. And we can provide both of those items along with the questions and the public comments from the website to council's office. But now I want to just ask of folks how we might consider getting these moved forward over to council for review. As of right now, it looks like the current document from the website is about 27 pages. I will say that some of the comments are multiple pages, so folks have done some thorough detail in providing insight into their perspective. But overall, it's a pretty lengthy document to submit. And what I can do is get that shared out. I think I can forward that by email. Wendy just
Brandon, how many unique comments? Like how many separate people?
Great question. So right now we have a total of 45 comments. Here, why don't I just share my screen so you can see that those tidbits there.
I know Wendy put it in the email, but I can't open two things at once.
That's okay. So here's what we have. We have 45 comments with 39 commenters, 2 alumni, 7 faculty, 10 undergraduate, 10 professional, 8 staff.
10 graduate, you mean?
10 graduate, 10 professional, 8 staff, and 8 undergraduate. And so, it's kind of mixed all throughout with a smaller percentage on from the alumni perspective, but that makes sense as they wouldn't be on a lot of the mailings that go out there. So that's where we have. And again, like I said, there's 27 pages. So if I...
Could I just ask a question? I don't know if others would find this helpful. It seems to me that a lot of the comments are from anonymous committee members, and I respect that. I have no problem with committee members offering anonymous comments, but it seems like there might be some value in identifying how many of these comments are actually from public people who are not committee members, because the committee has had lots of opportunity to discuss this. And I'm not saying, obviously, the committee's views should be considered, but I just think it would also be helpful to understand if the whole purpose of this exercise has been to get input from the public, it would be helpful, I think, to understand how many of those comments are, public versus committee.
Gina, do you have a clarifying comment there? And then we'll go to Nick.
I do, but I can certainly wait till everybody's done.
Okay, go ahead, Nick.
It's my understanding that the webpage shows anonymous committee member for anyone that is a member of any committee at the assemblies, not necessarily this committee. So it's just anyone that has a role within any assembly at the university is labeled as anonymous committee member, not particularly CJC members.
Okay, Gina, you want to go ahead?
I think Risa did, Risa, did you want to?
I'd rather hear the clarifying, because actually it was my question was how can, I mean, I can't tell if anybody is from this committee.
So Nick is quite right. The designation of anonymous committee member is a little bit more broad than just the CJC. What we can do is an analysis of the demographic of the anonymous comments, just to find out where they're coming from, not who they're coming from, but if that would be helpful.
I think that would be worth understanding, but I'm an ex officio member, so I defer to the committee on that.
I'm sorry, I didn't even understand. You can tell what, Gina?
We can tell whether they're faculty, student, or staff.
Oh, I see. Yeah, it never even occurred to me that our committee was putting up stuff anonymously, because I never put things up anonymously, so it didn't occur to me one way or the other. Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting. It seems to me, I certainly favor the notion of if you're on this committee and you have viewpoints that you should state your viewpoints on the committee. I mean, I favor that, you know. But I don't know that we can force people to say, you know, if they put their stuff up there.
Thanks, Risa. Maybe something to provide as an outside perspective of coming into this later in the game here is that this committee in and of itself has disagreement, much as the panelists that we had speaking the other day have disagreement. So it's a challenge for someone who may have an opinion about something that isn't shared entirely, and we are asking everyone to represent their constituency. So in the event that a feedback or comment is not representative of the entire CJC, I do encourage everyone to provide that feedback through the public forum, as I did earlier today, because I'm just going to say it from my perspective. I think we're going to have a hard time getting more than one item as the CJC put forth this item. And I don't mean that as an offense or anything to anyone. It's just a challenging and complex subject that provides a lot of different perspectives. And so I think that's where I was trying to encourage that input of the information into that the website, so that you can ensure that your feedback is provided in whatever form or fashion you choose, whether anonymous or not. I think it's important to have your voice heard, and understanding that, as I noted, that I think we will have a hard time, and we've got today and tomorrow to figure it out what we do as the CJC put forward as our perspective and our feedback on this revision. Any other thoughts or questions about the feedback as it stands currently? Go ahead, Nick, and then Kat.
Brandon, I'd like to suggest that we post all of the comments that we received from the public forum as public comments on the webpage, just because they are public comments. They were just submitted in a different way. And I think, you know, we're losing the value of the forum if we don't publicize those comments. And I think the only way to get them to council is by posting them in this public forum. And we don't have to say they're the official opinion of the CJC. We just need to say, this is what the CJC has received from the public, and we are sharing it in this public forum.
Thank you, Nick. Just want to clarify that the intention is to provide them in a separate document so that they can understand where they came from. That was my intention. I would welcome other opinions. There was that we would provide the website feedback. It's a downloadable PDF that Wendy has sent me and we'll be able to review. And then the comments from the forum are in a spreadsheet that I've gone through, and I categorize whether or not we answered. I watched the whole thing on double speed to figure out which questions were and were not answered, because from my logistical standpoint, I missed us noting that as we were going along, so I could easier do it. So I just went ahead and watched it quickly, and noted the questions that we didn't answer. So those two pieces would be, I agree with you, Nick, important to include. I don't know that we have the time nor need to input them all individually into the website.
Sorry, if that was not, what not individually. I just meant like copy and paste the file that you sent us just right onto the web page for transparency purposes.
Any other thoughts in regards to that, Jen?
I was just going to ask, I mean, I think everybody's comments are super important, and I love the idea of shared governance at Cornell, and it's been an interesting thing to learn. But we have 24,000, give or take, students on our campus, right? And then I have no idea how many faculty, I have no idea how many staff, maybe Gina knows, but let's say probably 45,000 total people, 40,000. Is that good? Is that close? And we had 39 people comment. I feel like we're spending hours upon hours on figuring out how to submit it, how to talk about it again. And we really should, in our best faith effort, give counsel what we came up with. But the reality of it is 39 individual comments out of a community of 40,000. What's that percentage? Like, I'm not very good at math. So, I mean, there's got to be, that's a really small percentage. And I just don't want us to waste so much time worrying about that. But really, what are we putting forward? What is council reviewing? CJC already submitted their draft. Like, we did that last year. We're kind of in this weird position now. And I don't know the best way to say, okay, it is what it is. 39 people had an opinion about it. That's okay. We have 40,000 community members that could have weighed in. 39 to me, I don't want to lose too much sleep over.
Thank you, Jen. I do want to note that the forum is actually on the public record. It's on the Office of Assemblies website. The video recording as well as the transcript over there is available on there. Go ahead, Nick.
Jen, I agree. That's a very small number. But also, when you look at how many people voted in the U.S. election and how many people live in the United States, we can't just discount those votes. They're not even 50% of the people in America that supported either president, but a president was elected because those people chose to exercise their democratic right. And out of the 40,000 people at Cornell, 90 of them decided to exercise their right to comment on this, even though all 40,000 had the right. Does that mean that those 90 shouldn't be listened to? I think it's kind of, it's just the principle of democracy. Not everyone has to participate, but we have to listen to those that did participate.
Right, right. And I thought it was 39, according to Brandon's calculation. But I agree. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying no, don't hear them. I mean, I say this to my students all the time. I'm hearing you. Unfortunately, you might not get what you want, but I definitely listen to your concern and I definitely understand where you're coming from. But unfortunately, maybe you're not going to be able to do X, Y, and Z. And sometimes that's just hard and that's okay, right? It's not that we're not hearing them. And I don't want that perception to be that I'm not open to hearing discussion. I've come to every open forum. I listen in these. I've read all the comments. And I'm not saying we shouldn't have these opportunities. I've been all for all of them. It's just, I don't know. It's a 0.01%. Thank you to one of the handy committee members who did some quick math.
Thank you, Jen. I'd like to recognize Risa.
I agree that we should move forward on this, but I actually think that in the middle of a pandemic, when people are incredibly stressed and they're studying for exams now, including my students, the fact that we got the level of participation we did at a hastily put together public forum, and I'm not saying hastily and I'm criticizing anybody, just the reality we're living in, I think we got pretty good participation as a qualitative kind of a matter. And I read all of the comments, including, you know, we had comments, of course, from the spring, which are not represented. I'll deal with that in a second. But I read through all the comments, and there are unmistakable patterns that come through the comments. And what's interesting about these is that they also, some of the patterns really coincide with the sorts of things that University Counsel's office said that they were interested in hearing. And one of them was the standard of proof It's like overwhelmingly of those who responded in the spring and now overwhelmingly in favor of clear and convincing evidence. The public versus private hearings, I think, is something we can also comment on, because at the public forum, Madeline said that, I mean, I wrote it down, she said she thought that people could choose to have a public hearing. The independence of the current JCC, but, you know, to be renamed, that was also overwhelmingly in favor of independence in the comments. The issue of clarifying that people get to, when there are questions and answers by parties' representatives, to clarify that that's both direct and cross-examination, however we qualify that, that came through as a pattern. And the ability for parties to be, to have either the JCC or outside counsel speak on their behalf, that came through as a pattern. So, you know, I actually thought it was quite interesting to read and see that there were very definite patterns, as I said, including on things that counsel's office said that they'd like to hear about.
Thank you, Risa. Recognize Kat.
Yeah, thanks, Risa, for like that summative comment and all of the comments that we've received. Just to clarify, are we debating Nick's motion that we make the comments and questions during the public forum posted on the website? I just feel like we might have gone sidetracked somewhere.
at this time, we don't have any motions on the floor. It was just a comment that was brought up to from Nick's perspective. So if anybody would like to make motions, obviously they can. But at this point, we're just having discussion around the feedback piece. And I think, Jen, that was your clarification that you were asking as well there. Is that?
Sorry, team CJC. I did bring it up.
Go ahead, Kat.
Oh, and I also just had another question. So I actually wasn't able to make the public forum. I had some complications with the student assembly meeting that was right around the same time. But I was curious, like, were there, I think, Risa, you mentioned that, like, there were people in attendance, which is great to hear. Were we able to get a feel of, like, was it a lot of undergrads? Was it a lot of not undergrads? Was it, like, alumni or something? I don't know if that's recorded on Zoom, but I would be curious. Thanks.
I don't believe that they note the demographics of the participant. So they're coming in through Zoom. But Gina or Wendy could clarify, but I don't believe they can do that demographics on a Zoom webinar like that.
Not any way to do that definitively. It was really more just name recognition. So
okay. Recognize Nick.
Thanks, Brandon. Kat, to answer your question, there were definitely most of the questions. You can see them on the thing that Brandon sent us, are from students, undergrads and grads. Some of them started with as an undergraduate, as a graduate. And then also the others that were public, I do know that they are students, the people, well, most of them. I can't say definitively, but, you know, just as Gina said, from name recognition. Also, we didn't give an invitation to alumni, as Marissa pointed out in the chat, so I don't think that message got through to them. But if I could provide my summary of the feedback and kind of my interpretation of it. So, I mean, by now it's pretty clear that everyone has a different opinion, as Brandon has mentioned. It's pretty clear that you all know what my opinion is, and we all kind of have a sense of where we all stand on this. I just wanted to say that I've been in consultation with the complainants codes counselors and also the JCCs. Is that the correct abbreviation? Sorry, I'm just like lost in all the abbreviations. With Marissa's office. They are actually all on the same page now. They've come to several agreements, which I think it would be wrong of me to not support, because, well, I represent both of them as the GPSA representative. So the only thing that there hasn't been a consensus on with them as the standard of proof, because obviously, you know, one favors one group and the other favors the other group, so they're not going to reach a consensus on that. But in terms of independence of the offices from sorry, from Barb's office. I forget the acronyms. So independence of the codes counselors and the JCCs from the OJA, they agree on that, and they're going to put that forward together as a proposal. Also, the right to speak for the counselors of both sides. They also agree that that should be retained, as well as cross-examination. So everyone that's essentially representing someone in this process has agreed to these things. And I really don't see why we would be opposed to that. It's really just like, in terms of, I mean, I would love to hear arguments against these two things, because I personally can't find any. And then one other thing I just wanted to bring to everyone's attention that I did in the email is the new proposal actually strips the university assembly of the supervision of this process. And just briefly, I'm gonna tell you something historical. I'm sure you guys know this better than me because I am a new student. But according to the assembly webpage, Cornell shared governance is an outgrowth of the 1969 protests. And the three basic functions for which shared campus governance was established and still continue to serve today are one, two, and then the third one is supervision of the campus judicial system. So supervision of the campus judicial system is a core tenet of shared governance and of our existence as assemblies. So I don't think we should sign that off to the university. Even if we pass the current proposal with everything that it has right now, the one thing that I don't think that this committee should approve is the fact that we will no longer exist as a committee and we will no longer have any jurisdiction.
Thank you, Nick. I think Kat had her hand up first, and then Barb, and then Jen.
I'll just defer to Jen first, actually. I'm still thinking.
And no, Barb would be next. Go ahead, Barb.
I'm not a voting member, so and Jen, I think you had some time crunches, so.
All I was gonna say is I don't think we're going backwards to change what we've already agreed to and submitted, right? Like, we've already submitted our document. Like, that was it. We're not reinventing the wheel again. So we agreed as a CJC last year that we were doing this restructuring and that we were going to go in this way. We've submitted that. That is off the table from what I believe. And Brandon, correct me if I'm wrong, but if we are reopening the whole can of worms again, like that, I don't even think that's an option.
Sorry, could I just briefly ask a question? Just a really quick follow-up. Jen, I don't think the CJC proposal actually waived our rights to supervision. I've read the CJC proposal from last year, and we don't say that we are like relinquishing our rights to supervise the process.
Barb, go for it. You're muted, my friend.
If you pull up the spring 2020 code revisions and look at the code in the principles and values, the statement that says authority over and administration of the code and associated procedures are vested with the vice president for student and campus life in consultation with the elected assemblies of the university. Actually, vice president for student and campus life is bolded and italicized. So, I mean, I'll just say personally, from my perspective, this whole conversation starting 2.5 years ago came with a proposal that it be more educational and be in the student and campus life process. So from my perspective, I would just second what Jen said. And that's not for me to decide. I'm just trying to provide information in terms of where we are procedurally with this.
Thank you, Barb. Kat, you had your hand up, but you put that down. Would you like to speak now, or?
I think Barb addressed what I was gonna say.
Okay, all right, Risa, I recognize Risa.
I think, you know, what I've been trying to do is to work from where we are, and where we are is that we have the University Council's version of what they said they did with the two versions that they put together. And that's what we have comments on now, other than the substantive provisions, right? Those haven't been changed. So in looking at where we are, I don't think we should be fighting about, are we saying too much? Are we saying, you know, what we should be trying to do is improve it. And I think that that's the most positive way that I can think about how to deal with this, with what we have from the University Counsel's Office. And in fact, Madeline in the forum said she did not think it was perfect. She may have overlooked things. There are things that she was, as she said, open to changing, including about things like, you know, the JCC's office and complainant representative's office speaking on behalf of, you know, the parties, et cetera. So, you know, let's actually, I think, do something constructive and say, how can we improve this? And it seems to me that if what we have is agreement from the complainant's code representatives and the respondents, the complainant's representatives, the respondent's representatives, I would like to hear specifically what those are and to see if we can endorse them as a CJC. I'd also like to ensure that amending the code stays in the University Assembly's office. And if that's not in the proposal we put in last time, I think that was an oversight and we can correct it because we're at a point where we're looking at the at what the council's office put out there. The council's office said they wanted to hear about the standard of proof. We got a lot of input about the standard of proof. We may not all agree on it, but we could see if we have a majority position on those issues. So I think all of these are constructive ways in which we can take what we have from council's office and give as much input to council as we can, learning from the complainants and the respondents' positions that they agree on.
Thank you. And I think I see Robert, you had your hand up, but I believe Jen had her hand up momentarily. So she's good. All right. Thank you, Risa. I recognize Robert Platt.
Thank you. I second, you know, Professor Leibowitz's recommendations to be positive and constructive and work forward. However, there is one sort of elephant in the room we have to deal with, which is the fact that a special meeting of the Board of Trustees, full Board of Trustees, has been called for December 10th, and allegedly a recommendation may be made to essentially take jurisdiction of the codes, which have been with you since 1970, away from you and give it back to Day Hall. And I think that should be something that the CJC and the full UA should focus on. If I were you, I would ask to have a delegation go to address the trustees on the 10th. I think that, you know, it really can't be left. Absent direct focused attention on this jurisdictional question, which Professor Leibowitz just spoke to, I think something very valuable that we've been working on for 50 years will be lost. And, you know, the momentum seems to be to have Day Hall push toward stripping the UA from jurisdiction of the code. So I hope you really address that in a very focused way and that you actually ask to have a delegation go to the December 10th virtual trustee meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. I recognize, Logan, do you mind if I recognize Jen? She has to leave shortly. Can I have her go ahead? Yeah, go ahead, Jen.
I've got to go, right? My meeting is already in another Zoom room. I have to run. I apologize. I think going to the trustees virtually is great. The problem is I think the CJC is divided. Like there is not a unified voice on this committee. And I'm actually like anxious about leaving because I'm trying really hard to use my voice. And I applaud everyone for doing that. But I would worry that what goes to the trustees isn't a unified perspective. And that would just make me nervous. I'm sorry. I do have to go. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Jen. I recognize Logan.
Thank you, Brandon. I know that I'm late, so I'm sorry if I'm repeating anything. My comment is really based off of what Bob just said, and I posted today publicly as CJC chair saying about the jurisdictional issue where currently in the proposed code, there are multiple areas where the University Assembly and by virtue of the University Assembly, the Codes and Judicial Committee no longer has jurisdiction in many areas, including amending, hiring processes, et cetera. And I think that that's been overlooked and is something that needs to be discussed. I also want to point out that if the CJC does come out undivided, the University Assembly at the end of the day is going to send a resolution out. So I highly recommend just trying to figure out if there is that division, how many people are divided, so that the UA understands where the debate has come in and where the major issues are of contention, so that that can be properly considered. I also don't know if this has been brought up in this meeting, but outside of the public comments that are closing tomorrow, I really think that it is 100% essential to look at the public comments from last semester. We have never done that as a CJC, and that's a huge problem, and it stripped the voice of many people. And I don't know if this CJC plans to do that or if they've talked about it, but if they don't, I'm going to bring up to the UA looking at those comments, because I find it really problematic that so many people commented last time and we just completely ignored it. Thank you.
Thank you, Logan. Recognize Kat.
Thanks, Logan. I really appreciate your comments. And also, yeah, I agree that, like, this is like a clarification. So like the comments from last spring, I can't actually remember what they were in response to, because I feel like some things have changed since then. If we were to propose looking at the comments from the spring, we'll be looking at like common threads that still are like being retained from like the new, okay, great, just checking. And then another question for Logan. So are you saying that if the CJC does not come to a conclusion, like a unified conclusion, you will go to the UA, or you will go to the UA no matter what, is just my question?
Well, regardless, this is going to go to the UA. So whether it's uniform or divided, going to the UA before a resolution goes to the president. So I was just trying to stress that. Sorry about Kale. I hope you can all hear me over here, but I'm trying to stress that if you can't reach a consensus, I think it's important to say how many people were in favor of one thing and how many people were in favor of the other and the reasons why, so that the UA can understand and deliberate on that. And I don't want there to be like this pressure on the CJC that they have to agree on everything, because that's not what shared governance is at the end of the day. But I want to make sure, no matter what, that the CJC has a voice and presents it, even if it's not unified.
Thank you, Logan.
Thanks. Oh, sorry, I was going to follow up. I don't know if that's allowed.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's really important. I appreciate that you're recognizing that there is divide. And I think Jen mentioned this right before she was leaving, that like if we ended up like, for say, like we voted on something and it was contended, just making sure that like if, let's say like, I don't know, like if I was standing against everyone else, but like my voice would still be heard when representing from the CJC to the UA, just because also recognizing that like there are certain bodies that are being more affected by the code changes than others. So for me, like undergraduates, but I of course respect every other constituent body and representative here. And going back to what Nick was saying early in this meeting, like even if only a few people comment or even if a few people disagree, we still want to like protect those voices. And then I guess to Mr. Platt, I really agree that we should be going to the Board of Trustees at some point. I'm wondering about the logistics of that. I would love to hear more thoughts about how that would happen.
Logan, go ahead, and then Risa.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to say is like last year we had a lot of contention and we weren't always on the same page as a CJC, and the university assembly knew that, and we gave arguments, like the strong arguments for why people were for things and the strong arguments for why people were against. The only thing I would the only thing I would say to everyone on this committee is when you're talking to the UA, just make sure that you talk in which capacity you're speaking on behalf of. So Kat, I'm going to use you as an example, but if you're talking on behalf of how the SA views things, make sure that you separate that out from the entire CJC and make that clear, because we had like some issues with that last time. And I also think for sure, Kat, if it's possible for a last like stretch out to the entire student body outside of just the essay tonight, if I don't know if that's possible in your capacity, but it would be fantastic if you could.
I can try. I actually wanted our VP external to handle that last week, but she was like out of commission because of finals, but I'll text her today.
I recognize Risa.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, we vote, right? We vote on things, and we voted last semester, and we voted before that, and votes are reported out. And they're oftentimes divided. So it seems to me we should continue to do that. I don't think any one of us has more weight than the other. The fact that I'm a faculty member doesn't give me any more weight than Kat, you're being a student, or vice versa. That's why we're here, because we have one vote. And you know, we never know exactly where a vote, whether it's gonna make us happy or not, but normally we go with majority rule, but we can report out what a vote is. Seems to me that one of the fundamental things that we really should vote on is whether to recommend to the council's office, because that's where what we're doing is going, to put back into this code proposal the language from the code that exists now with regard to amendments. And I just took a look at it to remind myself of what it says. And it basically would say that this code may be amended by the University Assembly subject to the approval of the president. And so I would like to make a motion that we recommend to the council's office to put this amendment process into the student code of conduct.
I'd like Thank to second.
You. Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Nick, is your hand remaining raised for discussion?
Yes. So I fully agree with what Professor Leibowitz said. In fact, I was actually typing up a statement, actually a phrase, one sentence that we could put out specifically to this and that we could vote on the language of how we're gonna say this. But I think it would be, I mean, just looking down the line, we would not be doing the future CJC committee members or the future students or the future University Assembly justice by taking away this right that was fought for in 1969 by so many different people. Like I'm not even talking about the substance of the code right now. I'm talking about we will be voting on relinquishing our own jurisdiction. I have never in my life heard of anyone willingly do that, ever. So I'm suggesting the following phrasing, if it's okay with Professor Leibowitz. The CJC recommends that the University Assembly retain the supervisory role over the code as it has been in the past, and the new code should utilize the same language of the current code when it comes to this matter. I can fix this to make it less wordy and weird, but something along those lines.
Thank you, Nick. I recognize Logan.
Thanks, Brandon. So I also want to talk in strong favor of this. I think that taking jurisdiction away from the University Assembly and the CJC is a huge mistake. And the University Assembly sits as the body that has all of the constituent groups. And the CJC is then tasked with these amendments. And at the end of the day, the president can say no, but it's a recommendation and it's historically stayed with the University Assembly. And this was not something that was asked to be changed by the president's office when we were tasked with doing the code. And all it does is harm us and put jurisdiction in the hands of administration where it historically hasn't been. So this is the reason that I'm here today. I posted a public comment and I didn't expect to, but I really believe that it's damaging for us not to include that language that Risa just read. It will be damaging for years upon years to come.
Thank you, Logan. I recognize Kat.
Yeah, I have no problem with this amendment. I don't know if I'm allowed to make a friendly amendment, but I would just like to maybe add like recommends that the University Assembly and the Student Assembly retain or maybe like develop some kind of relationship of like with the code. Just again, because like it is a student code of conduct. The Student Assembly, I think, deserves to have more of a voice in this. I know like we have SA reps to the UA, but I do strongly believe that like undergrads through the essay should probably have some sort of say in this as well. And I know this is unprecedented, but going back to what Nick was saying about the 1969 takeover that shared governance came out of and like this judicial process, like that was led by undergraduate students. Just, I wanted to recognize that. And like, this is not, I mean, I'm gonna be graduating soon, but I do think that's important that future like undergrads are able to have some kind of say. I'm not insistent on this amendment. I just want us to think about how we're going to be more inclusive of undergrads. Again, we're the ones who are most affected by the code changes. Just making sure that's being thought about.
Thank you, Kat. And I believe Barb, you were next, and then Nick.
Yeah, thanks. So just a couple of things. I think that, I don't know how many people have read or read recently. Hopefully everybody has. The subcommittee report from the Presidential Task Force on Campus Climate that was issued in June of 2018. That, to my understanding, is what spurred, you know, the work that has been going on for 2.5 years. And that document actually makes clear that the proposal is, you know, using words that I've been criticized for numerous times, an educational process that's less formal, except in the most in the cases where the most serious sanctions are on the table. So I think in that document, it actually talks about a process where most of student conduct would go to the Dean of Students office. I think that is a reflection, as Kat just said. I get that this is a community code of conduct. I think that's what a big part of the debate has been, is whether it should continue to be that. I don't, this various people in this group have criticized the administration and called it a power grab and said that people are trying to strip the rights of students. I don't think that is, I have a hard time with that categorization because I feel like I'm one of the people who are supporting these amendments. To your point, Nick, that nobody would ever conceivably relinquish those rights. To me, that's what this whole conversation has been about, is how we think about a code of conduct and whether it should be this quasi-judicial, quasi-criminal process, or whether it should be anchored more firmly in the work of student and campus life. So as I pointed out earlier, Logan, before you got here, this language that you noted in your public comment today actually does appear in the document that was publicly vetted last spring that says the Vice President for Student and Campus Life will have authority over the code and its procedures. So I just think it's important to at least acknowledge kind of where we are. There's a little bit of a suggestion that this is a surprise to people, that this is what's out there and on the table. But I think that's not a fair characterization. It may be news to some, you know, Nick, I appreciate your acknowledging that you weren't here last year to be a part in these conversations, but it has been part of the conversation from the beginning, as far as I can tell.
Thank you, Barb. Recognize Nick.
Thank you, Barb, for that clarification, and thank you, Kat. So, I'm actually glad that we're seeing eye to eye on this. I'm really happy that we can both support this. I will say though, the one thing that I don't think we're agreeing on fully, and that's also okay, is the fact that the undergraduates seem to insist that this disproportionately affects undergraduates. I know that I didn't interrupt you when you were speaking, so I'd appreciate the same. I know that in the past, it hasn't impacted them more. You gave me some numbers, 700 undergraduates or 1,000, whatever, 15 graduates. Yeah, that's unfortunate for you guys. I mean, you've gotten in quite a bit of trouble as a constituency. What I will say is, in the future, if we let the administration,
I'd like to call for decorum there, Nick, please. Let's be respectful of each other, please.
Thank you. But in the future, if we let the university just decide who they can prosecute however they want to in these secret processes, what's to say that there's not going to be 700 graduates being in trouble next year for no apparent reason, because the university can change the code however they please? So I agree. We as students should have a voice in how this is done, and we should be able to decide how the process is carried over, and we should be able to supervise it. So I don't think that we should relinquish our rights and give them to the administration. I think we should keep things the way that they are.
Thank you, Nick. Recognize Logan.
Thanks, Brandon. Yeah, so I just wanted to say that I completely acknowledge what Kat was saying about the amount of undergraduate students that are affected. But at the same time, I also acknowledge that there are potential trends, and maybe in the next 50 years, it will be graduate students that are being affected just as much. And we're also a smaller community. And I think that including in consultation with the student assembly would not be fair to the other constituent groups. And I also think that the student assembly has the power, like every other constituent group, to make a resolution, which they did. Your resolution from last year completely changed the trajectory of the code. So I think that having each constituent group being represented in the CJC, in the UA, in equal numbers makes a lot of sense, especially when the resolutions from the SA are weighed really heavily. And you saw that because the current code is a product of that resolution. So I completely respect your friendly amendment, but I have to disagree with it in the instance of shared governance and saying that I think that a resolution is more appropriate in that instance when you want to speak against something that you're disagreeing with, since there is fair representation already.
Thank you, Logan. Recognize Marissa.
Yeah, I mean, I also, as Barb has said, I'm an ex officio member, so take my comments with whatever grain of salt you want. But my perspective just listening to this conversation is that we're getting a little bit away from what the objective of today's meeting was. And, you know, I also think, I guess it concerns me a little bit, this line of thinking that feels like it's emerging, where we're saying on the one hand through this whole process that we really want to hear what the community says, and then it feels like we're completely willing to accept the fact that we're taking the community's voice away. I don't think it in good faith we can say that we're giving the code over to the vice president of student and campus life if we actually care what the community thinks. And what I've heard throughout so many comments that I think we all actually do agree on is that this does impact every single member of our community, whether you're directly involved in a case or not, whether you're an undergraduate student or a graduate student or faculty or an employee, we're all a part of this community. And that's actually something I hear time and time again, even from people I disagree with about the code, that this has a ripple effect that's bigger. So if we're gonna say that in good faith, I think that we need to kind of put our money where our mouth is and make sure that the process is representative of that. And also, you know, it is a shame that we only had 39 people comment. I think, you know, I think it would have been great if we could hear from more people, but that's the process that we said we were going to go through. And I think we do need to take the comments that we were given and forefront those, especially if the committee is unable to come to consensus. It's great if the committee can come to consensus on certain points, but if not, I don't think that we should let the many people that did weigh in get lost in this conversation.
Thank you, Marissa, and then we'll move to Reese. And I just want to remind everyone that we are currently in discussion in regards to the motion to provide an amendment into the recommendation for the CJC to recommend the University Assembly retain the supervisory role over the code as it has been in the past and utilizing the same language of the current code. Just want to remind everyone what we're speaking to. So go ahead, Reese.
Yeah, that's what actually what I also wanted to emphasize, that we have a motion on the floor. What I would like us to do is to vote on what the language would be. It might be wordsmithed, I suppose, but again, the language from the old code, which had various titles, so it wasn't written exactly the same way. But the relevant language would be that this code may be amended by the University Assembly subject to the approval of the president. Okay, that's the relevant language from the current code. That's what I would like us to vote on. And I'd also like to say that this in the spring when we were doing putting out a CJC proposal, it did not include anything about amendments. It did put a lot of jurisdiction under this, you know, the student life, whatever it's called, you know, office. The names keep changing, right? The OCC, SS, whatever, the OSSCC, whatever it is. But there was no language about amending the code. So I think this is a correction that is actually something that is a proposal that keeps the student voice front and center along with the other constituents over the code. And that's a democratic principle that sounds to me like we have a lot of agreement on. So I would like us to vote on that. And I don't know if I can call the question, but I'd like to call the question if possible.
Would you have a call the question? Do we have a second?
Yeah, second.
We have a second. All right. Heck, I don't even know what we're supposed to do.
So you don't vote on that, but actually okay. I see Kat has her hand up and I don't want this to be some sort of view that I'm trying to silence anybody. Okay. So it's fine with me if you want to call on Kat.
Could I call for a quick point of order, please?
Go ahead.
Kat, I'd like to apologize. I just realized that my comment didn't come out the way that I wanted it to. So I just wanted to clarify that. When I said it's unfortunate that you guys get in more trouble, that didn't mean that you guys are less well-behaved or whatever. It meant that it seems like you guys are more targeted by the university than graduate students. So I wasn't implying that you guys are like worse in any way than graduate students. So I just wanted to clear the air there. Like, I apologize if that came out wrong.
Thank you, Nick, and I'd like to recognize Kat.
Yes, thank you for that clarification, Nick. It definitely sounded a little weird. I was kind of shocked, but I appreciate your clarification. Just going to what Logan put in the chat. So I think like Nick made an amendment and then I like proposed, and it had, I don't know if it was seconded, I can't remember, but then I just like made an amendment to his amendment, but it was like an informal proposal for an amendment. Like I didn't say I was like, really stuck on it. I also didn't ask for a second. So just to clarify, we're probably in that area of voting.
Yeah, I think we have a call to question that has been seconded. So at this time, unless we would like to retract the call to question, we would need to vote on the amendment as it currently stands, or on the motion as it currently stands. So if I could get folks to
What is the motion? Because Nick had written this down. I hadn't said that I thought there's nothing wrong with what Nick says, but what I would like to do is to add, Nick, maybe you could type it in, utilizing the same language of the current code, which states that, and that's the language I wanted, which states that this code may be amended by the University Assembly subject to the approval of the president.
All right, so you would need to take back your call to question there so we can address the request for the amendment.
I never, this was my motion. I never said that this was, that what Nick wrote was what I wanted. I'm saying that's fine, but what I wanted should be in there.
Absolutely, Risa, I understand that. The call to question was noted, and so that would have moved us into that, and you are clarifying
what the question is.
What the question is. So the CJC recommends that the University Assembly retains a supervisory role over the code as it has been in the past, and utilizing the same language of the current code, which states that this code may be amended by the UA subject to the approval of the president. All right, so again, we have a call to question. So we'll now vote. All those in favor, please press the yes button. All those opposed, press no. All right, we have two yeses. Three, looks like we have three yeses then. And I will abstain. With that, the amendment, the motion passes. All right, so look at that. We got one thing we can present as part of the CJC's recommendation. So I appreciate that perspective. With that, I would like to keep us moving on our agenda. Robert, I see you have your hand up there. I'll go ahead and recognize you, and then we'll move on to how we're getting the feedback over to the council's office.
Right. I would sincerely recommend that, in the same spirit as the last motion, which you wisely adopted, you also recommend to the full UA that you seek to send a delegation to participate at the December 10th trustee meeting. I really think this is essential to the success of where you're going, no matter where you ultimately end up going. But I think the idea of direct communication between the very thoughtful members of the UA and the trustees is essential for success. So if somebody on the UA could make a motion to recommend that to the full UA, I think that would really get you where you want to go. The other thing, just as an aside, the mistake that the task force made was they put a draft out for public comment. We wrote extensive comments, and then they didn't consider or discuss any of the objections that were filed with them. And they just issued a final report that was exactly the same as their draft report. I would hope that you guys don't make the same mistake. And, you know, we really do need to have a way of moving forward the important policy debates that have happened in the comments. So I hope that process can continue. I just don't know whether it's viable to continue it on a December 10th deadline. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Okay, so just a reminder, folks, we do have the comments that we have available. So we have the option of providing those as they currently stand. So there's, like I said, the 27-page document PDF that brings forward all of the comments from the website without any changes or filtering to them. And then the transcript of the forum along with the questions. So those are both two separate documents that can be provided to University Council. In conjunction with the motion that was just passed here around the recommendation of the University Assembly retaining the supervisory role of the code. So at this point, I want to open up the floor as well to others to speak to any other items that we would like to include in our comments and or how we might like to see those comments pass forward to Council's office. Recognize Risa.
Yeah, my thought is that it would be nice if we weren't just simply scribes, you know. I think that it would be good if we didn't just simply say, okay, here they are. I mean, at the very least, I think we can reflect on, you know, what we were hearing. But again, that's sort of a scribe kind of thing. Like I said, you know, they're unmistakable trends. And to pick up on something Logan had said about last spring, there were also unmistakable trends in favor of clear and convincing evidence. I am personally very pleased that the council's office said that they would be fine with either clear and convincing or preponderance of evidence. And it seems to me that there's been a lot of argument in favor of clear and convincing evidence. So what I'm not really proposing a motion at this point. I guess maybe I could move it I'll just make a motion that the CJC endorse the clear and convincing evidence standard for the code of conduct.
Do you have a second for that motion?
Second.
All right, discussion? Recognize Logan.
Thank you, Brandon. So overwhelmingly from the comments in May and the comments from the forum and our public comments, if we tally it up, people want clear and convincing. And that's all I'm going to say.
Thank you. Recognize Nick.
Thank you. So I've already summarized this in a document that unfortunately failed at the GPSA, but It's garnered a lot of signatures from graduate and professional students. I'm going to go ahead and kind of express this opinion. So I think that the clear and convincing evidence standard, which requires that the decision maker find it substantially more likely than not, would be about 75% sure that a violation has occurred in order to find a student responsible, best advances principles of fairness. It ensures accurate outcomes and it creates trust. So basically in a hearing, the respondents who are often still teenagers, or undergraduates mostly, are frequently first-time offenders. So these are people that have just, you know, moved out of their homes and are living alone, and they don't have experience with these kind of legal issues. And they have to face an entire institution, Cornell University, an Ivy League institution with real lawyers, and the many resources that are available to it. So if the university switches to the preponderance of evidence standard, the code would be putting its thumb on the scale of justice against a side that is already systematically disadvantaged. This might be especially harmful to students from low-income backgrounds or students who are unable to afford an attorney, students who are international, who can't speak the language well. No evidence has been presented that suggests that the university has had any difficulty finding students responsible for violations under the clear and convincing evidence standard. In fact, they found most people responsible. Additionally, the clear and convincing evidence has been a longstanding standard used in non-sexual assault campus misconduct proceedings at Cornell. So the clear and convincing evidence standard signals to the campus community that the university is committed to avoiding finding the innocent responsible, thereby giving the community the confidence that the campus adjudicatory system is operating fairly. And we had a great explanation about this from Professor Claremont at the town hall. And then finally, the justification for shifting the preponderance of evidence standard, the new Title IX regulations were expected to require the same standards of evidence being used, is no longer the case. As we had the council tell us at the town hall, that was an oversight and that is no longer the case. So I think everything is pointing in the direction to keep things the way they are and not lower the burden of proof.
Thank you, Nick. I recognize Uche.
Yeah, so one thing I'm concerned about or I'm curious about is, like, from these public comments that I'm assuming that we're, or I guess the CJC is really trying to, like, base a lot of our decisions on, how many of them have come from, like, undergraduate students? And, like, because I know that right now, like, we have, like, what, 39 comments on, like, the page? I don't know, I read that somewhere, but I'm really concerned about, like, I know from, like, what we have right now, a lot of it looks like it's leaning in, like, one direction, but, like, I know when the student assembly came out with that resolution back in April, we had reached out to a lot of different student organizations, including Black Students United, La Asociación Latina, who else, NASAC, plenty minority organizations on campus who all endorsed, you know, a lot of the changes that the student assembly was, like, calling for. And so right now, like, I would have to push back and, like, or I guess disagree in that, like, there's another perspective. Thank you, Logan, for sending that to me. But I think that one of the things that I really want to make sure is, like, even though I know that people aren't really commenting or making comments under the current draft that we have right now, I think that it would be, I guess, valuable to really explore other, you know, options of getting these opinions and comments from, like, undergraduate students rather than just, like, relying on, like, public comment. Which obviously, like, we're trying, I know me and Kat, we're trying to make sure that people are commenting from the undergraduate side, but I think there may need to be another approach, comprehensive approach, to make sure that we're getting as many, opinions and perspectives as possible.
Thank you, Uche. I do want to provide some clarification as well, in that conversations with council, that this is the one item that council's office is amenable to not having be a clear decision at this time, and that allowing the University Assembly and the CJC an opportunity to get their own, if you will, I'll make a legal joke, clear and convincing evidence on this particular standard. I didn't get any smiles on that one. Come on, folks. It's Monday night at 5:35 at night. We gotta have a little bit of fun here. So I just want to acknowledge that the council's office is open to us providing that at a later time and allowing and acknowledging that we could provide, be it via a vote, a large vote being done for the university, we can do that. There's a number of different ways we could do that. So I just want to make sure you're all aware that council's office is amenable to not having that particular item be decided upon in this current revision that would go back to council's office and providing it to the council, trustee councils, to say, this item is to be determined based on and whatever process we as the CJC and UA decide. So I wanted to provide that guide. So yes, we recognize Risa.
Yeah, I'm a little puzzled about this, given that we've been told all along that we must have this done so that the trustees can vote on a date certain in December. And so it's, you know, I'm all for community input and having broad community input, having a referendum on it, you know? But I don't understand what the trustees are voting on then. And why is it that there are certain things that council gets to tell us that we don't have to have decided and other things they do tell us that we have to have decided? I just don't understand now. What is it that trustees are going to vote on? I mean, maybe you could clarify that for me.
You know, that's a good question, and I can't speak for council's office. I think I can say that council's office has been very clear in that they did not have an opinion one way or the other in regards to what that standard of evidence is, and that ultimately that it is, that's a particular one that they are relying on the CJC and the UA to make that recommendation for the decision.
But when you talk about later, I'm not attacking you, Brandon. I'm just really confused about what that means. And I also think that the CJC can have an opinion on it. Uche, I totally understand the frustration of not getting, you know, more people to make a statement. I think independently from the community view that there are very good reasons to vote for clear and convincing evidence along the lines of what Nick said. And then as well, you know, most of these, if not all of these hearings will be in private. And one of the ways that we create due process when you don't have public hearings is to make sure to up the due process in other areas. And so clear and convincing can make sure, as Professor Claremont said, that the risk of the mistake in decision-making is not placed on the person who may be innocent, but that the risk of the mistake is placed on the decision-making to make sure that we're convinced sufficiently in somebody's guilt if they can be facing very serious consequences.
Thank you, Risa. Recognize Nick and then Uche.
Thank you, Brandon. So I just kind of wanted to mention what Robert had said in the chat. I think that's a really good point to consider. Well, first off, we do have a resolution on the table, so I would kind of suggest that we stick to that for now. But also, the fact is the GPSA is fully in support, and I'm sure most, and I heard that, I believe Kat, when she came to our meeting, also said that she supports the informal resolution process, right? The like remediation process. So I think in that kind of setting, you know, there can be a separate standard because that's informal restorative justice. Yes, thank you. The standard can be different there because that's like an informal process. But in these formal hearings, I think it's really important, as Risa said earlier, that we maintain this due process and not end up finding someone responsible of something that they didn't do. As Professor Claremont pointed out, you know, it's better to not find someone responsible of getting drunk and being disorderly than finding someone responsible of getting drunk and being disorderly when they didn't do it. So I think we should keep the current standard of evidence. And also the university has really provided no evidence saying that they need to lower the bar or that they've had any trouble finding people responsible of things. And at the end of the day, even council didn't express their opinion on this, which means that they really don't have any strong feelings about this. So I think it's up to us to protect the rights of the students. And the only way, the best way we can do that is by keeping the current standard, which has already been lowered since when it was introduced in the 60s, 70s, I think.
Thank you. And being that there is a motion on the floor that is a voting motion, I want to stick to the voting members and then I'll get to the non-voting members. So Risa, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I just didn't put my hand down.
Okay. Then I recognize Uche and then Logan.
Yeah, so I guess, like, Risa, to your point, like, I'm glad that, like, I guess we share the same sentiments and that we want to have, like, a broad, like, overview, but I think, like, as it currently stands right now, like, I mean, I'm looking at the stats, like, it's mostly graduate and professional students who made these comments, and I don't know how much outreach or, like, pushing, like, the grads and professional students on, like, this committee have done to, like, get their people to, like, respond to this, but I think that, overall, like, I guess we can't, and I understand we're under, like, a very tight timeline, but I also think that, you know, we can't really say that this has been, like, super, if we're just going off of public comments, we can't say that it's been, like, super representative of, like, all students, right? And, like, I don't know, what is it? Like, we have 8 undergraduate students who've, like, identified themselves. So, like, I don't know, I think it just makes me very weary, because, like, I think that, you know, like, if we really want this to be, like, and I get we're under, like, a time constraint, but, like, if we really want to say that this is, like, as broad and, like, we've gotten as many, like, perspectives as possible, we need to make sure that, like, we are actually gathering those, like, comments and, like, responses from people before we, I guess, say that, this is, like, as representative as possible. And I also, And I know for, like, what was it, for the preponderance of evidence, correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember, I think Madeline Wessel, she mentioned how, like, with preponderance of evidence, it makes it easier for alternative dispute resolutions or restorative justice to take place under preponderance of evidence rather than clear convincing. At least that's what I've heard from the public forum that they had on Thursday.
Okay, just a reminder, folks, that we do have a motion on the floor. So again, I want to maintain to the voting members now so we can keep things moving. We have about 16 more minutes. So we'll recognize, I believe it was Risa and then Nick.
Yeah, there's no standard of evidence related to informal dispute resolution. That's the point, is that it's restorative justice or it's mediation. It's not about proving X, Y, or Z. So preponderance of evidence or clear and convincing evidence has nothing to do with the informal proceedings. They're different. And I'm all in favor of informal proceedings. And I think it's great if we don't have to go to a hearing. And if people have a genuine way in which we can actually, to pick up on the educational piece that Barbara keeps talking about, and I agree with, it is good to be educational. And I think that restorative justice and alternative dispute resolution at its best is educational. And if we don't do that, look, and my area is law, and lawyers may enjoy being lawyers in hearings, but we know that it's best if we can have resolutions that do not require hearings. But if those informal processes don't work, then we have people saying, okay, I want to be in front of a hearing. I want to have that decision made. And so that's a separate process, and the other one has nothing to do with the standard of proof.
Thank you, Risa. Recognize Nick.
Thank you. I just really wanted to acknowledge Uche's comments about the fact that we really don't have a lot of public opinion on this. But I also just wanted to clarify, for the sake of kind of explaining my position on this, I'm not actually basing it on the feedback that we've gotten. I'm just basing it off of legal principles that were explained to me by various professors of law here at Cornell. I'm not a lawyer myself, I'm a geneticist. But so my understanding of this comes from people who are, you know, versed in the topic. And I'm just going off of myself as, you know, as an international student, as a queer student, I just wouldn't feel comfortable knowing that I would have to go up against an entire university with an army of lawyers, and they're going to have an easier way of finding me responsible of something that I'm not responsible of. I would rather make it harder for the university that has all of these assets on their side when they're trying to find me guilty of something. So that's kind of my two cents on this. And that's about it. But thank you for raising those concerns. I do think that we should get consensus on issues of this great significance without being rushed into making decisions as we've been recently.
Thank you, Nick. I recognize Logan.
Thanks, Brandon. I also just wanted to talk to Uche's comment about the low turnout for student comments. And I'm pretty upset overall about the comments that we received. I thought that we were gonna get a lot more. And at the end of the day, what I am going to propose to the UA, whether it comes through the CJC or not, is for a standard to be connected to the code that goes before the board, because I don't believe in leaving something blank for later times. That's obviously not going to be my call. It's going to be the call of the University Assembly. So I would love if the CJC were to reach agreement or disagreement and give reasoning why, so that the University Assembly can also then have that same kind of debate. I am going to bring up the fact that restorative justice and a burden of proof are completely separate entities, and I don't know why they keep getting connected, but they're entirely different, and they preponderance does not make restorative justice any easier. Clear and convincing doesn't make restorative justice any easier. They're just two entirely separate things. You go through the restorative justice or diversion system, or you go through a proceeding and then you have the evidentiary standard. But I highly recommend that either there's a vote on this today or there's a vote on this at the next meeting, and that the University Assembly at least understands where the CJC is standing on this. And I really am going to push that I do believe that all of those comments from May, which were a lot from undergraduate students asking for clear and convincing. So whether they're not commenting now, there were comments then. And the day after our hearing, there was a post on Reddit that somebody sent me a screenshot of. And like, this is getting a lot of traction. I think it had like over 400 upvotes. So like, I think that there's gonna be more Cornell Daily Sun articles. I just really think that we shouldn't leave anything blank. I'm sorry for rambling. I think leaving things blank is dangerous.
Thank you, Logan. I wanted to just clarify that we feel a sense of deadline for tomorrow on this particular topic, and that there is not a necessarily deadline for tomorrow, but I obviously respect everyone's concern, and that getting a definitive answer is important. I just wanted folks to not feel that if we don't reach a vote on this particular item tonight, that we have no opportunity with which to provide that feedback to the council's office, keeping in mind that the University Assembly is not meeting tomorrow, so they won't be providing anything tomorrow. At this time, just to clarify, one, we have a motion on the floor that I want to just make sure we keep in mind. And two, that what we have as a responsibility tomorrow is to move the public comments from our hands to council's hands in some way, shape, form, or fashion. And that that the council's office has that time frame in which they are turning that back around to the University Assembly and the CJC to review the revisions that they make based on the feedback. And so there, just wanted to make sure I'm clarifying why I was bringing that up as a topic, so that folks didn't feel an overwhelming need for this to be done right now and today. And I don't have an answer on when they would expect that answer. So recognize Risa.
If we can decide on when to actually have a vote on this, I would be willing to withdraw my motion so that people feel that they've had enough thoughts about how to gather information and I don't know, think more about the issue. But I agree with Logan, and I might say it in terms of, I think that just as nature abhors a vacuum, that perhaps the Board of Trustees would as well. And I don't really want the Board of Trustees to make this decision for us and to say, look, they can't decide anything, so we will just put in preponderance of evidence. And I'd also like to, I was actually going to say something that Marissa just posted here on preponderance of evidence. One of the arguments for a higher standard of proof is in fact to protect against racial bias. And we have lots of important examples in history in the courts, including in the criminal justice setting, where the higher burden of proof is essential to avoid stereotypes and bias playing even unconsciously into findings of guilt or responsibility. You know, this is a well-known issue of justice. And so it seems to me that the better argument for trying to address problems of whether it's explicit or more likely unconscious racial bias is to make sure that we have a standard of proof that is sufficiently convincing that we don't allow unconscious bias to move people towards stereotypes around the person who's being charged with misconduct. And obviously there's certain types of misconduct where that can play out more than others.
Thank you, Risa. I'd like to recognize Uche.
Brandon, voting member. I have my hand raised.
Sorry, Nick, I didn't see
it. Question.
All right, we have a call to question. Now I wanna just clarify, Risa had stated that she would potentially call back her motion. Risa, are you still keeping the motion on the floor?
Well, I said I would be willing to consider it, but you know, we're all here now, so there's something to be said for voting. But I would like to, you know, I mean, I would appreciate hearing from Uche and Kat about their views on this. So, you know, but Nick has called a question. We haven't had a second on it yet.
Okay, we have a call to question. Do we have a second? Seeing none, I guess we continue discussion. Is that how that works? Yeah, all right. So then we'll recognize Uche and then Kat. Or actually, let's recognize Kat as a voting member and then Uche, please.
Can I cede my team to Uche so he can speak first?
Go ahead, Uche.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess one thing that I really want to make sure that we all acknowledge is that you know, me, Kat, and Christina are the only people of color who are on this call. And so when we're, especially when we're talking about, at least for me and Kat, when we're talking about undergraduate students, and I know Logan, you mentioned how back in May, there are a lot of comments from, okay, I apologize, Marissa. thank you for that. Thank you. But I would also just like to acknowledge the fact that when we, back in May, when a lot of those undergraduate students made those comments, I'm just very curious as to knowing, and I know we probably don't have information on that right now, but knowing the racial makeup of the students who actually made those comments, just because when we were doing our rounds and reaching out to, you know, these student organizations that represent Black and Indigenous people of color, overwhelmingly, all of them, you know, when we gave them the options and told them like the different standards of evidence and told them what was at stake, or like the majority of them called for preponderance of evidence as this. And I'm really thinking that, like, especially with something like this, like I think we should be very much so conscious about, especially when we're talking about undergraduates, is be very conscious of who we're actually reaching out to and getting perspectives and comments on this code. I think another thing that was mentioned is that I know that, who was it? Marissa, you mentioned preponderance of evidence arguably harms students of color more than anyone else because of the role bias plays in the decision-making process. I don't know if this is related, but one thing that I was just very curious about is I know that back in September, we made the executive committee for the UA, we made emergency appointments to the UHRB. I was a person who got all those names, if we're being completely honest. And one of the things that I noticed is that the people who are on the hearing board are overwhelmingly, you know, white cis men, from my understanding. And I made it a point to make sure that we're gathering more people of color, more women on the board, making sure that it says, you know, queer people, you know, different from people from different departments. And I think that's something that, you know, when I was going out and gathering these people, I was also just kind of just disappointed at the fact that, like, yeah, like, I understand that there's bias and there can be bias in the decision-making process for this, but it's also like taking a look at who's actually in the room making these decisions. And from what I found, it's just mostly white cis men who are making these decisions for people. And I was like, one of the ways that we can mitigate this issue is making sure that we're putting more people who are actually affected by, like, you know, these changes, or more at risk for being harmed for by any changes to this code, making sure that those are the people who are actually in the room and a part of these decision-making processes as well, which is one thing I think can combat that.
Thank you, Jay. I just want to be mindful of time. We have about 3 more minutes. We still have a motion on the floor, and we have Barb, who'd like to make a comment as well. And we have not gotten to the recurrence of meetings and scheduling a recurring meeting. I know that the topic was brought up to have a follow-up meeting tomorrow. So I think that may be something that we might want to discuss, but keeping in mind, we still have a motion on the floor. So we need to come to a consensus on how we're going to address that, whether we had a call to question that was not seconded, perhaps a motion to table that particular item at this time. Or the call to question again and see if someone would like to vote, folks would like to vote.
Motion to call the question.
The motion, do we have a second?
I'll second it.
All right, we have
Barb, I think Barb has her hand up.
Yeah, so we have a motion on the floor. So I want to get the voting members and then we have the call to question. So we're gonna have to go ahead and move to the vote. So all those in favor, press yes, all those opposed. Press no.
One last time, could we just get like what we're voting on? Just like
very clearly? Thank you. Sorry, we are with the motion currently on the floor is, and let me get back to it where I put it in my notes here. The phrasing was, hold on, I'll get there. The motion is for the CJC to recommend the clear and convincing standard of evidence. Okay, so all those in favor? We have 2 yeses and 2 noes. I will abstain, but this time the motion does not pass. Okay, want to recognize, can I get a motion to extend the meeting? I think if we had about 10 minutes, we'd be good. Can I motion?
So moved.
Motion, seconded?
Second.
All right, Barb, I recognize Barb.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to point people to Jen's comment in the chat box, which is, you know, this is not a court process. It's not a legal process. It's a student conduct process. We're an educational institution. And I know that there are people in this group and in the UA who believe, and I agree, that there are people who teach in an area have a perspective on it that is worth considering. 50 years ago, when this code was initially, the structure for the current code was initially adopted, there was no field of student conduct. There is today. The academic fields of student development in higher ed are not as well respected by many people, as they're regarded less highly than some other academic fields, including the law. I'm a lawyer. But there is real academic learning in the field of student conduct, and there are real student affairs professionals who practice it. And I just think it's regrettable, Nick, you said earlier that you haven't heard any arguments about any of the issues such as the structure of the independence of the codes counselors or a couple of other things. And you've said that there are, you know, the administration is targeting undergraduates and going after them with armies of lawyers. This language is really just so unfortunate to this conversation. I wonder why this committee, which wants to have jurisdiction over the campus code of conduct, has not ever seen fit that I know of to invite any people on this campus from student affairs, let alone any experts from other campuses who have expertise in this area. These things are all fit together. The standard of proof, what the structure looks like. And I just think it's really regrettable kind of the language that's used around the people who are proposing this to suggest that we want to strip students of their rights and to suggest that, you know, we are trying to assert a power grab over the campus code of conduct. This language is just really unfortunate, and I think it disregards a whole area that I really hope, if this group is serious about wanting the UA and CJC to retain jurisdiction over the code, then I hope that you will inform yourselves and be open to what those processes look like on other campuses and what the learning is, what the academic learning is related to this field.
Thank you, Barb. I believe I just want to note as well that we have still to decide on how and in what format we'll be sending forward our comments. It seems as unlikely that we will reach a consensus this evening. Just a reminder that our deadline is 5 o'clock p.m. tomorrow. As such, we may need to consider an additional meeting tomorrow, unless there is anyone who might have a motion on how we do move those documents forward to council's office. So something to clarify. So recognize Nick.
Thank you, Brandon. I'm going to be very brief. I wanted to thank Barb for what she said. I actually think there's a lot of learning value, and Kat also acknowledged it in the chat from other schools. I recently came here from Columbia University, where the standard of evidence is actually the one that preponderance of evidence. And the process, in my experience as an undergrad at Columbia, was not very educational, but that's probably because of how they implemented it. But I agree, we should definitely have people come talk to us about this. And I want council to come here, and I want Ryan Lombardi's office to come here, and I want to hear from undergrads, and I want to hear from grads. But I worry that we're in the middle of a pandemic and we're forced to follow these deadlines, which are unfeasible. Like a lot of us have people passing away from COVID right now. I'm currently dealing with personal loss. There are people that are dealing with this. There are people that aren't going to school, and so much is going on, and the university is pushing us to make this decision right now. And it's clear that we're not on the same page, but I want to be on the same page, and I want to learn as you suggested. I want to be on the same page with Kat, but I feel like Cornell isn't giving us time to address. Well, yeah, 2.5 years, but a pandemic happened. And I think we need to postpone this. And the university just won't hear that option. I don't see any harm in doing this a bit later when all of us can think about this more and give it the time and respect that it deserves.
Thank you, Nick. I recognize Kat.
Yeah, Nick, I appreciate your comments, and thank you for sharing how you're also coping throughout this time. I do want to just second what Barb said. This group has been working this for a while. Like, again, this started in 2017 with an issue where an undergraduate student of color was beaten in Collegetown, and that sparked, you know, changes to the code. And yes, this is a new group, but the Board of Trustees has been waiting for a while. And I think, I guess Nick is saying, why are we trying to give into the Board of Trustees, but I think we should be trying to get these changes in as soon as possible so we can actually move from there and then start working supporting students through our new code. And also just the idea that we should be postponing this even further, how much longer is that going to take then, I guess.
Thank you, Kat. I recognize Robert.
Thank you. Again, I don't think that the Board of Trustees has been pushing for a resolution. I think it has been the president that has been pushing the Board of Trustees. I think that the basic idea here is, do you want to have a model where you have freedom of speech and academic freedom and freedom of inquiry and expression on campus? And if you do, what sort of environment do you want to have putting boundaries on that? And unfortunately, since 1970, the Regulation of Maintenance of Public Order draws the line between what is permissible free speech and expression and what is out of bounds. And the burden of proof you have sets the amount of chilling effect on expression. There's a direct connection. So everybody, even people who aren't planning to engage in misconduct in the dorms, are affected by that boundary. I would urge you to come up with a pathway to reach a decision on this. If you want to consult with experts, welcome all sorts of expert opinions, because I think there's a lot of expert opinion that would support clear and convincing evidence, including FIRE's model student code, and address in the first instance now whether we can get out of this December 10th trustee meeting deadline. And I really wish you would focus on that, because it's going to be a case of the president saying, look, if you trust me, give this to Day Hall to run. And there's going to be very little voice on the other side expressing the value for having the community and the UA run the process. And I think that should be the focal point rather than the details of the process or how many students were consulted in the last 2.5 years. So I would really urge you to focus on how to get out of this December 10th meeting trap. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. And because the topic's been raised, I just want to clarify that the deadline is very set. The president was very clear in that deadline is not a non-negotiable, a non-adjustable deadline, and that the deadline is set and non-negotiable due to the fact that it has taken well over 2.5 years for this to get finalized. I understand that pandemic happened, but I just want to make sure we're all in understanding that it was made very clear from the beginning in me taking this role that that December 10th deadline is not a negotiable deadline. Obviously, we as the CJC and the University Assembly can make our case and argument against that, but I don't feel, and I'll speak from opinion here, I don't feel that that will be something that will sway or adjust that December 10th deadline. Again, being that we're at 6:08 here, I think that there are some conversations around the feedback that need to happen tomorrow. I might make a recommendation that we look at considering a meeting for tomorrow afternoon closer to the deadline timeframe in which we would have all of the feedback. And so I wonder if I might be able to recommend that we look to tomorrow afternoon after there's a faculty staff town hall at 3:00 to 4:00, and then at 4:00 potentially tomorrow to reconvene to discuss matters again in finalizing our feedback. How would folks, if I could get perhaps someone might want a motion for a meeting tomorrow. Jen?
So moved.
You have a second?
Second.
All right. Do we have to vote on having a meeting? I don't think we have to vote on that one. It's motioned and seconded. We'll reconvene tomorrow at 4:00. If I could just get a show of hands, if folks can make that 4:00 to ensure we would have quorum tomorrow. All right, I like to see that. Good, okay. All right, so I'll have Gina, if you could, or Wendy could, I'm not sure if you're still here, to put a meeting on for tomorrow at 4:00, and we'll reconvene in light of that. Look at that, 6:10. Could I get a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
All right, second?
Second.
All right, thank you all so much for your conversation this evening. I look forward to tomorrow evening to finalize our feedback from the comments section, and we'll get this done, folks. I appreciate it. Have a great evening, all.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.